Welcome to Real Money, Real Experts, a podcast where leading financial counseling and coaching experts share their stories, their challenges, and their advice for helping people manage money in the real world. I'm your host, Rachel DeLeon, Executive Director of the Association for Financial Counseling and Planning Education, or AFCPE.
And I'm your co-host, Dr. Mary Bell Carlson, an accredited financial counselor, or AFC, and the president of Financial Behavior Keynote Group. Every episode, we're taking a deep dive in the topics that personal finance professionals care about, helping clients, building community, and your professional growth.
The opinions of our podcast guests are their own, which means that their stories, views, or lived experiences may differ from yours or mine. However, the one thing you will always find on this show is a common thread. Our guests are passionate about helping people with their money to improve their lives, and they believe in upholding high standards for the clients and the communities that they serve. We encourage you to tune in to Real Money, Real Experts with open curiosity. Why? Because it's oftentimes in the conversations where viewpoints or stories differ from our own that we learn the most. Lisa Prudencio is an accredited financial counselor, content creator, and the founder of Wealth for Women of Color. After a 10-year career at Google and YouTube, Lisa left the corporate world to pursue her mission, empowering women of color to break down financial barriers and build wealth. In just 2 years, she has built a social media following on TikTok and YouTube, known for her inclusive and easy-to-understand approach to personal finance. In addition to being an AFC, Lisa is a proud UCLA alum and holds a master's degree in communications from the University of Southern California. She's currently pursuing the prestigious CFP designation. Based in Los Angeles, California, she is passionate about being a lifelong learner and sharing her knowledge to empower others. When she's not working, you can find Lisa on the court playing basketball, tennis, or pickleball, or walking her two dogs. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we have to know, what kind of dogs do you have?
Oh, they're total mutts. I adopted them from the shelter, so I have no idea what they are. But my guess is a mix of Shiba Inu, Jack Russell, Terrier, Corgi, maybe, and I'm thinking Chihuahua.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
That is quite a mix.
Those are the best kind of dogs, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have one leg at my feet.
Well, let's talk about your transition. You went from the corporate world to pursue your mission and passion. Tell us a little bit more about this journey and what led you to doing your work now.
Yes. So I have been completely self-employed full-time for almost 2 years now. Prior to that, I had no intention to ever become a full-time entrepreneur. And I want to attribute that mostly to my upbringing. My parents were immigrants from the Philippines. You know, they both have these stories of coming to America with less than $20 in their pocket. And so it was always instilled in me to work hard, go to college, get a good job. So that's exactly what I did. You know, I worked hard. I studied, went to college, grad school, got a good job, and worked in corporate. I just thought I would continue to go that path of, you know, making a higher salary every couple of years. But then I actually faced a period of burnout, which I know is a term that's becoming more popularized now, which I think is a good thing. And that burnout is kind of where I had this realization that this corporate life was not for me. And that's when I ended up going down this path where I became an accredited financial counselor, but it was a long and windy road. It wasn't a straightforward, you know, light bulb decision that led me here.
Lisa, you have started your own private practice and your focus is really on empowering women of color to break down financial barriers and build wealth. Tell us a little bit more about that and what led you to pursue a private practice there.
Well, I'm a woman of color. I have a Filipino American background. I actually serve everyone. I'm not closed off to, you know, working with men, working with people who don't identify as people of color. I think when I was trying to decide on this brand name, it really occurred to me that my own experience was rooted in me not feeling included in conversations of wealth. You know, growing up, I never heard about investing. Even when I got into adulthood, I started working at Google, I was around a lot more wealthier people or high earning people. I didn't really understand, you know, stock vesting and people investing for retirement and buying real estate. So all these things I just kind of ignored for the most part. And I, again, this is, you know, my personal experience, not to speak on others, but I think it's a part of my experience growing up in my culture from a lower income community. I grew up in Salinas, California, went to public schools my whole life. I think that had a lot to do with it. So when I was coming up with this brand name, you know, in my mind, I was like, oh, I want to serve people like me, women of color. I was afraid at first to put anything like that in the brand name or any of my marketing, because, you know, there's people out there who think being inclusive of certain groups means exclusion for others. So I constantly have to explain myself on, you know, my channels. But all that to say, I want to help people who may have had a similar experience growing up where, you know, there was no talks about building wealth, investing beyond retirement, and really finding financial security and financial freedom. I just want to kind of normalize that discussion for women of color and anyone else who wants to listen.
You know, one of the things that I find interesting with your background is you talk a lot about the wealth gap and non-traditional ways of building wealth. Can we dig into that a little bit more and help us understand how you help clients close that gap and build wealth?
Like I mentioned, I never grew up understanding investing. I thought that buying a home to live in, you know, that was the extent of what I learned. My parents actually were able to buy our childhood home, and we actually owned it, even though it took a really long time to pay off. And so that was kind of the route I was going. You know, I'm going to get a good job, get a high salary, and then buy a house. It wasn't until I learned later on in my 30s or so that didn't always equate to investing, right? Buying a home is not always a good investment. It's not technically a financial decision all the time, right? There's the emotional aspect behind it, the, you know, feeling secure, and, you know, even cultural background of why you want to own the home that you live in. So when I started learning more about investing and reading more personal finance books, and I realized that there's a whole world out there, not just the stock market, but, you know, other things that you can do with your money. You can create multiple streams of income by building businesses, even taking on side hustles. You know, 9 to 5, one source of income is not the route for everyone to reach financial security. That's when I realized that I think we have to normalize those discussions. You know, I think there's nothing wrong with working a 9 to 5. In fact, if I never went through my burnout and, you know, just everything pivoting in my life, I probably would have still been working a 9 to 5. I was making a good salary, had a good job. But I think a lot of it comes down to I never heard these conversations growing up. I had to kind of find it myself and then start learning and normalizing it. And then now that's what I hope to do with clients, for anyone who watches my videos, you know, on social media, just to normalize those discussions that anyone can become an investor. Anyone can grow to become an accredited investor, right? There's other things out there that we can be investing in to truly build wealth and change the world.
I love that. You know, at AFCPE, our mission and vision is really focused on ensuring that all people have access to these types of opportunities to meet with someone who has the background to help them, you know, create a financial foundation and have access to long-term wealth building. And I'm curious, as a practitioner doing this work, do you have any thoughts around the roles of institutions versus individuals and how we can work together to really bridge some of these gaps?
I think, you know, attacking this wealth gap, the income gap, is going to take all hands on deck. Mm-hmm. And I think oftentimes, you know, there's a lot of onus put on the individual in terms of we should become financial literate, you know, pick up a personal finance book, take a personal finance course, start budgeting better, start investing. And I do think that's important. I think that's a big role of what we do as financial counselors is helping people navigate those decisions in their own lives. But I do think it would be unfair to completely expect people to figure that out all for themselves, especially because we all come from different backgrounds of, you know, different types of privilege. And even just the factor I've explained with my own life is and not being exposed to certain things. So on the institutional side, you know, I'm seeing a lot of great work being done by colleagues in this space, other content creators and influencers who have a voice, getting involved in policy in their communities. And I'm blanking off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure that there are more and more states that are requiring personal finance literacy in high schools. You know, that alone, I don't think is going to solve it, because financial literacy is only one piece of the puzzle. But I do think that's a start. And I think, you know, between community-based programs and the conversation being more normalized, you know, social media democratizes a lot of this information. I know there's pros and cons with social media, but it does democratize this information in a way that it hasn't, you know, even when I was growing up in the 90s and early 2000s. So I do think there's a lot of hope. You know, I wouldn't say I've completely lost faith in the system. I do have faith that there are going to be ways in the future to provide resources, education to the people who need it the most.
I would like to follow up with your designations. I'm really curious of what led you to pursue the AFC.
So it was a windy road. It wasn't a straightforward path. I'm a lifelong learner. So throughout the course of my career, after college, after grad school, I've continued to take classes. And part of it is me searching for hobbies. And part of it is me trying to, I'd say, upskill and explore new areas. And so a couple years ago, I stumbled upon the Financial Therapy Association. Mm-hmm. This was around the time where I was going through my own journey with therapy. I was going through burnout. And I was also going through my own journey of really, really getting my finances together. You know, I knew bits and pieces here and there of personal finance. And I was lucky enough to have started making a pretty good salary early in my career. So I never had to worry too much about it, except for when I really was trying to buckle down and figure my stuff out. So between these two things, I was interested in whether or not there was people out there teaching people how to sort of heal their relationship with money and, you know, dig into the financial side of past traumas and, you know, childhood, you know, things that we learn in childhood. So I stumbled upon the Financial Therapy Association. I signed up, I saw it, I was immediately interested. And so I signed up for an account and I applied for this program, only to find out that the prerequisites for it required having some kind of counseling certification, like, you know, clinical licensed social worker, or holding a CFP, Certified Financial Planner, or an AFC, Accredited Financial Counselor. So this is not when I started my AFC. I busted out a spreadsheet and I looked up all the financial certifications that I could that were of interest to me. So, you know, financial therapy, AFC, CFP, I think Certified Financial Education Instructor. And I kind of just outlined, you know, what it would cost, what I would learn from it, and what career it could kind of lead to. And I would say one of the reasons I chose CFP to begin with over the AFC was it had a higher price tag on it. And at that time, I got educational reimbursements from my job, not the full amount, but I was really trying to utilize my benefits at my job. So I was like, you know, let me go for this, you know, prestigious certification. I started the CFP, and immediately when I started the CFP, I was like, Lisa, did I pick the wrong one? I had no idea what any of this stuff was. You know, it's insurance planning, tax planning, estate planning, all these elements that, again, I've never been exposed to. Very hard for me. Each class in the program that I'm in gives you about 3 months. For every class that I've taken, I've had to pay for an extension because it's taken me that long to learn the material, reread it, really understand it. So, you know, I've been doing the CFP. I hope to get it within the next 12 months. That's the goal. But in the meantime, this is totally the longest story to get to my AFC. it all connects. I promise. It all connects. So as I was doing my CFP, you know, I started posting content on social media and I started realizing that a lot of the questions I would get on social media were more about foundational things. It was more about the foundational stuff. How do you budget? What accounts should I get? How do I understand my employee benefits? How do I read a paycheck? So granted, I felt like I knew enough information to answer some of those questions and make videos, but I really felt at that point that not just for myself, but for potential financial planning clients, there was going to be a gap. How do we get people from those foundational elements of finance to this stage where you have a financial planner, financial advisor, and you're really being really strategic with your taxes and things like that? So that led me to realize, more important than anything else, for the people that I want to serve and for the people who are already watching my content online, there had to be this gap filled where we have to get your foundations in place. So I wanted to supplement my own knowledge with, you know, a structured program and education, and even the community that we get with AFCPE. There's really great connections that I've made there where other people are growing their businesses and dealing with similar demographics of people. So that led me to pursue my AFC, in which, lucky for me, a lot of my CFP work and coursework and experience, you know, some of those hours counted towards my AFC hours. So it was nice to double dip a little bit on that. But overall, that's kind of what led me to the path of getting my AFC, of which, since I got it, I want to say a year ago. I think I got it a year ago. It's all been uphill. A lot of great things have happened since then.
Yeah, I love that story. It was not windy or long, but I think
it felt long.
I think what really resonates with me, I think what you're sharing too, you're not alone in that journey. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, some people go in wanting to solely be a CFP. They want to be a financial planner. They want to help people, you know, invest their assets and that kind of work. Plan for retirement. And I think that's so valuable, but there's so much you can learn from a dual designation and having those foundational skills around counseling and credit and debt that really makes you more of a well-rounded professional, able to serve people from all demographics and walks of life.
You can't see me right now, but I'm nodding my head very hard. Yes, absolutely.
Lisa, I wanted to ask a question too, because you mentioned at the beginning, you know, your pivot in career, very mission-driven, but also kind of started from a period of burnout, which I think a lot of people can relate to. I actually started my career in a corporate ladder climbing position and had a very similar situation, you know, in my early 30s, where it was sort of kind of a crossroads where you're, you know, is this where I want to be versus do I want what I'm doing to be more mission focused and purposeful? But we often hear about burnout from, and maybe burnout isn't the right word, but entrepreneurship can also be difficult. And I think from the outside looking in, there's something, you know, it sounds really amazing to be your own boss and make your own hours and do all the things. And it's also really hard. There is the hustle Yes. behind that. And so I'm curious, as you've been building out your own practice, what maybe did you learn through, you know, working through that burnout period of your Yeah. life that you're applying now?
Oh, I've learned a lot. I don't regret having gone through it because of what I've been able to take from it and incorporate into my life now and my business now. That period that led me sort of to burnout when I was working in corporate was a period of years where I was really, really trying to get promoted. And through many reasons, whether, you know, systemic and unconscious bias or just the actual nature of there being little headcount and not enough, you know, promotions to go around, whatever that may be, there was a period that I just kept feeling like I had to work harder and harder and harder to really prove that I deserved that next promotion. And so I didn't know it at the time, but it led me to a point of just being really upset at my job, at, you know, at my higher ups, at my colleagues, to points where I was like, I just don't want to work today. I even had a couple conversations with my manager who was very supportive. I just told her like, hey, I'm not feeling it this week. I think I'll take the week off. You know, that it got to that point where I couldn't pinpoint what was happening, but I lost all motivation. I felt exhausted. I felt like I had no focus and energy, and I just didn't care. I stopped caring. I didn't care if I got fired or anything like that. And she was very supportive, sent me to HR and said, you should have a conversation. And they said, you know, you should probably take a medical leave, just take some time away from work. So initially I decided, you know, let's take a month off. I don't remember the last time I've had a month off of anything.
Right. Most of us can't remember that.
Right. Exactly. Even dating back to high school and college, yeah. We've had part-time jobs and summer school and things like that. So I don't remember the last time I had a full month off. So what was interesting to me in that first month was very little changed. I was still unmotivated. I still felt lost. And, you know, I was going through to therapy at the time, working through it, and I had to extend a few times. And what I ended up coming out of it with was this realization that through, you know, the first 35 years of my life, I had been programmed to work hard, like work really hard, be productive all the time. It made me uncomfortable to take walks or go out and do something, you know, even just not even read a book, but like sit on the couch, not doing anything, because I felt like that was wasted time. So it was a long journey, but it got me to the point where I realized I've been working so hard my whole life that I don't know what I'm doing it for. I don't know what moments am I actually present in, you know, taking a walk where there's no timeline, where I can just go out in my neighborhood, walk until I feel like not walking anymore, as opposed to I'm going to walk for 15 minutes because I got to get back to a meeting. Same thing with driving. I've noticed my driving has changed. No, I no longer speed anywhere or rush to get to that next meeting. I have time. I can bake it into my schedule to leave, you know, 10 minutes early to make sure I get to an appointment on time. And so all these small changes in my life, you know, these are now life changes, not just career related. These are things that I take with me as I'm now self-employed entrepreneur on my own, on journey to build what I'm building. I don't currently work a full 40 hours. I make sure that when I am, you know, watching TV in the evenings or having dinner and hanging out with friends, I'm not checking emails. I'm not, you know, I've really learned that, I guess, work-life balance is the term we're all familiar with. But I've really learned not just that, but being present and really, really being grateful for what I have and what I'm doing in a given moment. And so far, 2 years into this journey since leaving the 9-to-5 world, I have not felt any burnout at all. I actually feel energized when I sit at my computer and have a 3-hour work block to, you know, to create content or meet with clients. I'm actually excited about it. So I don't know, in a way I feel refreshed. And I think another thing is, I think now I'll be able to spot signs a lot sooner if I'm on a path to burnout, and I have tools to prevent that.
So you don't see Rachel and I both smiling at each other saying, oh, we understand that burnout ever so much. In fact, it's so interesting, Lisa, because I think sometimes people can think, oh, it's because she's an entrepreneur. That's why she doesn't experience burnout. But as an entrepreneur myself, and on the opposite end of the spectrum as you, I'm sitting here going, wow, she's been really intentional with that, right? Like you have purposely, like you just said, carved out a 3-hour block to work on content creation. And I think that there's a lot that goes into it, whether you're a W-2, a 1099, whether you're working for someone, working for yourself, whatever that looks like. I think what I'm really hearing in this is the intentionality of it. And maybe if you're not in a place to be able to control that environment, then you need to make a change. But it's really about you being more intentional with your resources, which includes your energy.
Interestingly, I'm a member of a Toastmasters club, so I'm doing a speech this Friday, and the speech that I've prepared is about how to free up more of your time. And yeah, so very, very timely to be talking about this. So the gist of it is doing a time audit. So a lot of times we get lost in the hustle and bustle of life and we just don't have time for things. And in the speech, I allude to this very divisive quote that is floating around the internet, which is that Beyonce has the same amount of hours in a day as everyone else. And, you know,
I don't believe it.
Right. It's a hilarious quote because obviously, technically, it's true. We all have 24 hours in a day. But, you know, Beyonce has an amount of resources and power that she can utilize to free up her time. So, you know, not without giving the whole speech on this podcast, the gist is once in a while taking a step back and auditing your time, right? Just what are you spending your time on? Maybe for a week, journal, write down where's your time going? And then alignment, checking, are these things that I'm doing throughout the week aligned with my goals and values? And some of those things you won't be able to change, right? If you can't change your commute and you've tried to ask to work remotely, or if you tried to carpool and, you know, things like that haven't worked, there are some things you won't be able to change. And then the last piece of this time audit is figuring out where can you become more efficient? What can you outsource or offload? And being the type A productive person I've always been my whole life, I would have never thought that I would give up so much control in my business than I do. I want to do it all. I think a lot of us, for those listening as entrepreneurs, if you're multi-talented, you kind of sometimes think like, why would I outsource video editing when I know how to video edit myself? Why would I outsource, you know, creating a blog? Why would I outsource scheduling my clients when I know how to work a calendar? And at the end of the day, you might be able to do all these things, but it's finding your balance of what you're okay letting go of because you're freeing up your time and your energy. And so that's something that I've really incorporated as I've built my business is thinking about what are those things I really want to hold on to that I love doing, that I want control over, versus what are the things that someone else can do just as well as me, you know, might cost some money, but I'd love to free up that time. So yeah, that the speech is about doing that audit. And once in a while, every couple months, maybe once or twice a year, just look at how your time is being spent and see what you want to change. There's no judgment. You're just doing an audit.
I really like this. And actually, I see it as even a bigger topic that you really resonate with. And that is gratitude. Because not like you said, I love the thought of, yeah, Beyonce has as many 24 hours in the day, but you really hit the nail on the head. She also has more resources and each of us has that. So what have we been given to also accelerate this? And I heard you say earlier, what privileges do we have, right? What were we given that maybe someone else wasn't? Long story short, I'm just kind of thinking internationally now. I work and do some work in South Africa, and I always leave that country so grateful for carpet, for a roof, for a bed, like the most simplistic things that you don't think about in our Americanized world. But those little things, I come home a more grateful person from that trip every time I go because it helps recognize, oh, I have been given a lot. So you kind of look less at the problems and you spend your energy on more on gratitude for what you have, even though it may look different than Beyonce's or someone else's, right?
Right. I remember, so I have a big extended family in the Philippines, and I won't get into the story, but by maybe luck, my mom was there were 13 siblings in my mom's family, and four of them got the papers to immigrate to the United States, and the rest were in the Philippines, or are in the Philippines. And I visited there a couple times, and we have those kind of differences even within our own communities here in the United States. But sometimes when you see like the how big the difference is and the contrast, that is kind of sometimes what I think wakes it up in people's minds. So, I remember going to the Philippines maybe 5, 6 years ago, and I had a cousin that was working at a Dunkin' Donuts or something like that. I don't remember the exact number, but I know that the amount that she made in 1 month is what I made in like 2 hours. It equated very differently. And so, seeing things like that, hearing things like that, you can't help but have empathy, right? There's a line, right? Like at some point, if you just feel guilt, that doesn't serve you. So,
Sure, right, sure.
it's more of a, yeah, an empathy that you build up, an awareness for your own situation, because when you have that perspective and that relative perspective, it makes it a lot easier for you, like you said, to practice gratitude. And you don't even have to actively practice gratitude. It just becomes a part of who you are to know that we do have privileges, even if it might not feel like it. There's a understanding that we do have something. And we do have control over certain decisions. Like I said earlier, like I still think, institutions and, policies have to reflect, wider change. But I do think for individuals, it's sort of releasing, I think some people call it the victim mentality, but kind of releasing that to a degree and accepting that there are things you have control of and there are things that you can do your own decisions to improve your life.
Lisa, at the end of every interview, we always ask our guests to share their two cents. If you had one piece of advice to leave with our listeners, what would it be?
Be a lifelong learner. This goes for everyone. This goes for, counselors, coaches, entrepreneurs, but also, people trying to improve their finances. It's been really big for me to always be open to learning and not only learning, but unlearning. Because, sometimes we learn things either incorrectly or, with gaps in them. And so I think the more you are open to learning and unlearning with curiosity in the world, I think your life can improve. This goes for finances, your relationships, everything. Everything improves with kind of that growth mindset.
Lisa, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me at Wealth for Women of Color on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Rachel, it was so interesting to talk to Lisa. I really appreciate the part where she opened up at the end and talked about her time management skills, like that transition from corporate into her personal space, but really how it wasn't just even changing jobs. It was really about more her intention and how she uses her time and how she makes space in her schedule for things like driving to appointments. And I'm only smiling because I'm just sitting there, the one on the road, like, I'm late, I've got to get there. But how intentional you can become with even the small things so that it frees up your day, your mind, and your space that you feel like you have time for other people to become a better listener, a better friend, a better partner, whatever that looks like for you. The other thing I really appreciated was this idea of gratitude and just understanding. I think she called it understood empathy, where you're really understanding someone else's, trying to understand where they're coming from and not just seeing it from your one viewpoint. I think her Filipino background shows that she really has that ability to connect with people, and her passion is obviously connecting with people, women especially of color. And I just think that's really neat that she's leaning into those strengths that she has to be able to say, I want to empower you. I want to give you that same freedom that I have found for myself.
Yeah, I really loved learning about the work she's doing, what led her to the AFC and that journey. But I'm right there with you. There was something about the openness and vulnerability towards the end that I think people can really resonate with. We have all been, you know, at a different level of, you know, have had those periods in our life that are just tough, where motivation is waning or burnout or whatever you want to call that. And just her ability to talk through, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. Those changes don't happen. And I think that resonates both from mental health perspective, but even in a personal, you know, a financial health perspective. Behavior and change is hard, and doing that work is really critical. I also really liked her 2 cents at the end. And, you know, we hear that a lot. A lot of AFCs are lifelong learners. It's something that we really value here at our organization. But I liked her point about being a lifelong, about how learning is sometimes unlearning. And I think that's a phrase that is so important. Sometimes it's not about learning something new, but it's about gaining new perspectives around things that we might not have been exposed to. And sometimes that is the biggest part of learning that allows us to grow as an individual. So loved this conversation today, and so glad Lisa could come on the show.